Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adusk, and this is Financial Survival brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold, silver, coin needs. We will start the festivities today with market report as usual. Gold is up $9.90 an ounce to $1,389.10. Silver's up seven cents. It's $21.86 per ounce. Platinum is up. Platinum is down $4 to $1,484 an ounce. Palladium is up $2 to $760 per ounce. In the equities market, Dow Jones is down 108 points to 15,014. Market's not closed. Hard to say how it's going to work out. They might break below 15,000 before the end of the day. They might not. It's not important, but it's at least interesting. NASDAQ is down 33 points to 3,404. New York Stock Exchange is down 70 points to 9,186. U.S. Dollar Index is down 0.17. to 80.92. You know, a lot of people, I'm sure most people don't follow the U.S. dollar index, but just in the last 10 days. The U.S. dollar index, which is a way of measuring the value of the dollar against six other fiat currencies. It's really a strained measure. People use it even though it's not reliable. It doesn't make good sense. How do you measure the value of a fiat dollar against six other fiat currencies when all of them are losing value constantly? It doesn't result in an absolute measurement when the U.S. dollar index today is 80.92. Well, what does that mean? You know, there's not an absolute meaning behind that. There's an elastic meaning because it's measured against six other fiat currencies that are also falling in value. But it's nevertheless interesting that earlier, I think last week, within the last 2 weeks, the U.S. dollar index was up over 84, which is high. Right? And in recent times, that's fairly high. And I was surprised by it. Now it has fallen down below 81. So we'll see how far it can go. The idea, of course, behind the U.S. dollar index is that as the index falls to lower levels, the dollar has less purchasing power. And in theory, the price of commodities like gold and silver should go up. Now, in fact, the relationship between gold, for example, and the U.S. dollar index is not. It's not one-to-one. It's not an absolute relationship. U.S. dollar index goes up sometimes. The price of gold goes up with it. You would expect, perhaps, when the U.S. dollar index goes up and the dollar becomes more valuable, then it should take fewer dollars to buy an ounce of gold, and you would expect the price of gold to fall. That's true much of the time, but it's not true. That relationship does not hold true all of the time. I'd say it probably works 60% of the time. It'd be my guess, 70% at the most, but there's at least 30% of the time when the movement in the U.S. dollar index and movement in the price of gold don't correspond at all. That's not a surprise in a world where the price of gold is significantly manipulated on a regular basis. In any case, it's still interesting that the dollar has fallen to 80.92. That means as compared to the 84 level of 10 days ago or thereabouts, the dollar is inflating, it is losing purchasing power, and prices for goods denominated in dollars should be going up. But we'll watch and see. This is today's report, 80.92. Tomorrow it might be back up to 81.5. And the following day it might be up to 82. Hard to say what's going to happen. But the U.S. dollar index, it's a crude indicator of what may be happening, what may be about to happen. Crude oil, of course, is up 48 cents per barrel to $95.86 per ounce. It's hovered around the $95 level for some time, goes as low as 90, comes back up to 98, perhaps thereabouts, falls back down. It's been about 95. If my recollection serves, it's been in the neighborhood of 95 for most of the past, I'd say 6 months anyway, maybe more. So what else do we have that's interesting today? Let's take a look at a couple of charts here that you can't see, I can. And the charts reveal that physical demand for gold and silver coins remains strong. For 3 months through June, gold sales are 120,000 ounces. That's 46% higher than for the first 3 months for the 3 months leading up to the $1,900 gold peak in 2011. We're selling more gold. We have higher demand for gold now, 46% higher demand than we did when the gold peaked at $1,900 an ounce. Now, you look at that and you wonder, how is it that we can see the demand for gold increased by 46%? And the price is still off by almost by quarter compared to what it was in 2011. Anyone have any explanation for that? We have more demand. We have no obvious increase in supply or significant increase in supply. And yet the price is lower. It's evidence, not proof, but it's evidence that the price of gold is manipulated and suppressed dramatically. It's also evidence, not proof, evidence that the price of gold may be headed upward. The demand is up by 46% compared to what it was when gold was $1,900 an ounce. It's up 46%. It suggests that the price of gold pressure. Demand is up. The supply is roughly the same. The price, in theory, in a true free market, should be going up, and I don't doubt that it will. Although I can't say it's going to happen this week, next week, this month, next month. When, as long as government and people in positions of power have sufficient power to influence the price of gold, if only temporarily, it may be that the free market is not going to instantly assert itself and push gold up to a price where gold should be. All right? Everybody understands that. But the implication is we need to be patient. We need to wait. You know, it may be that gold is not going to hit the highs that it deserves to hit this week, next week, perhaps even before the end of this year. But the day is coming when it, I believe, free market must assert itself. Powers that be run out of money, and they have to abandon the manipulation. When that happens, gold soars, in my opinion. Here's the dollar amount of gold sales, and the three-month sum is $100 million higher than the 2011 gold peak, and it's the highest level since June of 2010. And finally, April data for China retail buying of gold, silver, and jewelry show record sales. Even if jewelry accounts for 40% of sales, that leaves $3 billion of gold and silver sales for the month of April, which is more than the U.S. Mint gold and silver coin sales for the past year. You understand? The people of China are buying more gold, bought more gold in the month of April than the people of the United States bought from the United States Mint in the past 12 months. You got to ask yourself, what does this mean? And we can sit here and say, does it mean that the Chinese are just a bunch of dummies? They're buying all that gold. What are they buying? What do those Chinamen want with all the damn gold? Don't they understand that they should be buying stocks? Or maybe bonds and paper debt instruments instead of gold? Why do they do that? And the average American would be confused, and they might ask those questions, say, what's wrong with those Chinese? But the flip side may be, what's wrong with the average American who is more willing to invest his wealth into paper debt instruments that are almost certain to lose, cause him to lose some of his assets? Why is he dedicated to paper debt instruments while the Chinese are going to gold? Maybe the Chinese are doing the smart thing, and maybe the American people are not. So we have to, we've got to bear that in mind. We don't know. We can't tell for an absolute fact what's going to happen unless we have the gift of prophecy, and I do not claim that blessing. All right? I can't tell you for an absolute fact what's coming in the future, but I can tell you that every indicator is that the price of gold is going to go up dramatically, and the Chinese seem, and they agree with that. They agree with that prediction. And the American people, they're sitting back a little bit, and they're saying, I don't know about that. Well, we'll watch and we'll see, but I'm willing to bet that the world is probably right and the American people are probably wrong. And those of you who have sense enough to see what's happening need to jump in and get gold while the getting is good. Understand? What else have we got? Here's just more evidence on the economy. Just talking about, according to shadowstats.com, economist John Williams' site, which recalculates economic data according to the way it used to be counted before the government changed the methodology in an attempt to hide the depth of the current economic crisis. Real unemployment here in the United States is at 22%. Inflation is around 9.3%, and the U.S. gross domestic product is moving backwards, all of which indicates that we are already in a depression. I've mentioned it on the radio a couple of times. Paul Krugman, an economist, Nobel Prize winning economist, and something of a lapdog for the government. But even he admitted back in an article he posted on April 28th in the New York Times, when he said we've been in a depression since 2008. He used the word depression, and he said he implied we're in a depression, and he implied that we've been there since 2008. The point to that is there are people in positions of power that are beginning to recognize that not only is it true that the recovery hasn't taken place, but it's true that no recovery is going to take place, and instead we are in a depression, and we might just as well start to deal with things from that perspective. We may have to face that we are in that depression. We'll watch and see. Some people still doubt that we're in a depression. Say, how can it be? It doesn't seem like a depression. I look out the window and the world seems to be running pretty good. But I'm always reminded, when we talk about this, I'm reminded about one of the most surprising things I learned probably about 5-10 years ago. I can't remember when. I'd been told throughout my life that the Great Depression started in 1929 when we had the stock market crash and investors were jumping, stockbrokers were jumping out the windows of tall buildings, and that was the onset of the Great Depression. And we were led to believe, I was led to believe, as a child and a young man, that the Depression started just like flipping a light switch. One day everything, we had a boom going on, and the next day in October, I think it was, of 1929, we had the stock market crash. Oh my gosh, and everything turned black right then. Went from bright lights to blackness instantly. And it wasn't like that at all. I found out later, and maybe 5 years ago thereabouts, that in fact, as late as 1933, there was still considerable debate as to whether we were or were not in a depression. What we were taught to believe started in 1929. It turns out that the people at the time, they were still debating, I don't know, are we in a depression or not in depression, 4 years. After today, we look back and say it started in 1929. 4 years later, people are still debating whether there was or was not a depression. And the point is that it's not abundantly clear whether we are or are not in a depression. It is quite possible, as Mr. Krugman implied in his article in the New York Times, we've been in a depression since 2008. And when they go back and write the history books, they won't say that the depression started in 2013 or 2012 or 2011. They will trace it all the way back to 2008 when we had our particular economic problems, all right, dramatic economic problems with the mortgages more than anything else, all right, that precipitated something in 2008, 2009. In retrospect, we'll probably go back and say the depression started then. But here we are in the midst of what is probably a depression, and it's not abundantly clear. Are we not in a depression? Most people think of unemployment figures. Again, they talked about 22% unemployment from John Williams at shadowstats.com. They think of unemployment as a figure that tracks the number of people who do not have a job. However, that's not the case, as people who have given up looking for a job are not counted according to the way the numbers are calculated by the government. Often a drop in the unemployment rate really means that some job seekers have simply given up looking for work, disappearing from the list of those who hope to find a job into those who have accepted poverty. They say, look, I can't get a job. I've had it. A little money I have, I can't afford to spend it on bus fare or whatever in order to get me to places where I can look for a job. I'm just going to sit on the couch and drink whatever I can purchase with my welfare stamps, my food stamps, and watch TV. And when they do that, then Obama says, well, he's not unemployed anymore. He's simply become a couch potato. Or some people would say a potato. That's an economic term for people who don't have jobs, a couch potato. In any case, despite the establishment media outlets, establishment media outlets will broadcast such drops in unemployment as proof of an economic recovery. And in fact, we may not be recovering. We may already be in a state of depression, economic depression. And if so, we can wonder how much worse can it get? Government statisticians also utilize smoke and mirrors when it comes to calculation of inflation. Newer inflation readings leave out staples like food, fuel, and housing in order to beef up the end results. The problem with this is that most poor people spend almost all of their money on food, fuel, and housing. And as a result, those products are typically the first to rise in price with inflationary pressures. Well, all of that means is the government is trying to convince you that everything is hunky-dory. And if you look around and you actually look at the numbers, the truth of the matter is, number one, the government is lying. We might not be in a depression, but we're clearly not in a condition of hunky-doriness, another economic term. Why is the government lying? It's because things are worse than they want you to know or believe. That is the only explanation for it. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What is our special today? I don't have it right in front of me, but I'll find it in just a moment. There it is. Today's special is the same as yesterday's special. 4 almost uncirculated $5 Liberty coins. That's a little bit less than a quarter of an ounce per coin. Basically, an ounce of gold in quarter ounce chunks, coins. The subscription, a year's subscription to the International Forecaster. You get a renewal, or you can renew a subscription if you have one, or you can get a new subscription. Shipping included, $2,000. These classic coins trade for relatively small premiums over their gold value, making them an outstanding buy. The International Forecaster reports on global information on business, finance, economics, social and political issues. Regular price for this combination of 4 AU $5 Liberty coins, gold, almost uncirculated, 4 of those, plus a subscription to the International Forecaster, regular price would be $2,150. You save $150. Give Carla a call at 1-800-375-4188. 1-800-318-4188. You will be happy to take your order or answer your questions. 1-800-375-4188. Discount gold and silver. What else have we got? We've got privacy is in the news because the government has been caught. It's been exposed that the government is following virtually all of our phone calls. All right, certainly millions. I don't know about all of them. I don't really know what percentage of calls, but an enormous number of phone calls are being monitored by the government. They claim they're not paying attention to content. They're only trying to figure out who you're talking to, okay? But you can learn an enormous amount. I mean, if 20% of my calls are going to members of the Tea Party, known members of the Tea Party, the government can infer that I'm a Tea Party person. And according to the IRS, that means I'm less eligible for some benefits in the tax system than might otherwise be true. Now, they can learn a lot about you just from knowing, it's like saying, where do you spend all your time? We're not going to follow what you do. We just want to know where you are. We're just going to follow your car. That's all. We just want to follow your car. Well, if your car is known to stop in at a routine basis at a topless bar, this tells people in government they can make some certain deductions from this. They say, this guy's stopping in a topless bar every night after he gets off work and before he goes home to the wife and kids. And if they find out that you're parking your car on a regular basis in the parking lot of a gay bar, that also is revealing information. So the government claim that these are only modest intrusions into our privacy. And Obama made that claim. It's just absolutely false. It's a mistake. It's a damn lie. All right? And certainly it lays the foundation for more to come. If we allow this, I guarantee you, right now they say we're not paying attention to content. And I'll guarantee you within 2 years, you're going to find out they're paying attention to content. They're going to say, well, we're only paying attention to content when you use certain particular words, like detonator, for example, or plutonium. Well, of course, we follow any of the conversations that use those words, and we can pick those up with computers, and then we listen to them ourselves. But after they get to where they're only following content that uses some prohibited words or suspicious words, I guarantee you there are going to be people when they say plutonium in their telephone calls, they're going to, when they mean plutonium, they'll say coffee. Huh? And within their little click, people will know, they'll know that when someone says coffee, they really mean plutonium. Okay? And that will mean the government's going to have to now start going after anyone who uses the word coffee in their email or their telephone conversations. They're going to have to monitor you more closely. And I guarantee if you're going to let this go, they are going to be monitoring everything you do, including writing on the side of the stall in the men's room. All right? Before it's done, it's all going to be monitored. And I'll show you a little evidence of that, perhaps. Let me see if I can find that. I don't think I pulled it up for subject, but I'll talk about it briefly. Maybe it's up here. Here's a comment from Wendy McElroy, and she's talking about privacy in an article. It's entitled "It's a site for individualist feminism and individualist anarchism," and she's complaining about the government's intrusion and their spying and so on by the National Security Agency, and she writes in part that the right to privacy rests largely on a presumption of innocence. I think that's a very nice insight. I think that's very nice. I appreciate that very much. Why do you have a right to privacy? Huh? Well, it's because you are presumed innocent. That's why. You have a right to be left alone because we don't have any evidence to the contrary. Now, if we have evidence that you have engaged in some sort of offense or criminal activity, that's another story. Then, in theory, the police go to the judges, the judge signs a warrant, and they say, okay, go in there and knock on the door, and if necessary, knock the door down, find out what the heck is going on in that particular house. Your right to privacy is overcome when there's at least probable cause to suppose that you are not innocent, that you may be instead guilty of some crime or offense. So here's Miss Wendy McElroy. She says, the right to privacy rests largely on the presumption of innocence. I think that's right. I hadn't thought of that before, but it strikes me as a very good insight. And we are told that we're all presumed innocent until proven guilty. So in theory, the government, the presumption of innocence, should be able to maintain our privacy until we are convicted. Now, of course, it's not working quite that way, but the whole idea of surveillance is the presumption that you are not innocent. You may be up to something, aren't you? You're thinking thoughts that might not be conducive to big government. You are a dissident. You are actually using your head. You may not have even attended public school. You might be home educated. You might be homeschooled. You might be capable of original thought. And somebody's got to keep an eye on you, because you might actually want this country to support your right to liberty rather than the government's right to control everyone in the country. Miss McElroy writes, she continues, she says that presumption, the presumption of innocence and the right to privacy, assumes that in the absence of evidence of wrongdoing, an individual has a right to shut his front door and tell other people, including the government, to mind their own damn business. She's exactly right, but it's the presumption of innocence that lays the foundation for your right to privacy. And we can see, therefore, it follows that insofar as government thinks it is entitled to conduct surveillance on your phone calls and mine, your email, my email, they are operating on the presumption that we are not innocent. We are no longer presumed innocent. We are presumed guilty of something. And that guilt I've talked about in the program previously, that guilt is going to be our increasingly antagonistic opinion with regard to government. There is a growing number of people who are simply fed up with government power, government intrusion, government presumption that it can do any damn thing it wants, anytime it wants. We've had enough. And we're sitting back and we're saying something's got to be done. And we, the people who say something's got to be done to make this damn government pull in its horns and leave us alone, we are the ones the government's concerned about. They're not concerned about Al-Qaeda. They're not concerned about terrorists. They're concerned that a political wave is growing in this country of people who are increasingly opposed to big government. They want to know who we are. They want to know who we're talking to. And they want to be prepared in case they have to do something to shut us down, because this is an adversarial relationship. The government can't have the power it wants if people like myself and you are going to resist, complain, condemn, criticize, oppose, challenge whatever government says or does. They've got to get the dissidents out. They need our consent. They need us to comply without problem. And the reason is that it costs money to push people around. They want your automatic compliance. They want my automatic consent. And if they can get that, and mostly they do, or at least they have for a considerable period of time, then running a police state is pretty easy business. But if you stand up and resist, all of a sudden the police state says, oh my gosh, where are we going to get the money to pay for this resistance? For example, let me give you an example. Most communities have a police department that issues traffic tickets. And in most instances, the number of people who actually go to court on their traffic tickets, I'm going to guess, is certainly less than 5% of those who receive tickets, and it might be less than 1%. Now, I don't know what the number is, and that number might be increasing during these difficult economic times, but it is still a small minority of people who go to court on traffic tickets. What the government wants you to do is the cop's going to issue you a ticket, says, oh, you crossed a white line, or, oh, your seatbelt wasn't fastened, or, oh, you were driving 8 miles too fast and you're exceeding the speed limit by 8 miles an hour. And therefore, you have to pay us $250. Okay? You got to pay government. And that's what they want. They want the cops out there to collect the money. It's not about protecting the white line. It's not about minimizing speeding. It's about getting money for the government with little or no effort. They get a cop. He goes out. He can probably strike 4 times an hour, maybe more than that. He should be able to issue 4 tickets an hour. If he's collecting $250, $300, $400 a ticket for every one of those instances, this guy's bringing in over $1,000 an hour. Got one man, one car pulling in $1,000 an hour. That's pretty good income, and the government wants that income, and they want you, after the cop stops you, intimidates you, hands you the ticket, they want you to just stick some money in the ticket, put it in the mail, because that's easy. What they don't want is for people like yourselves or me to go to court on traffic tickets, because it costs money to prosecute those traffic tickets. And if you are particularly, even if they find you guilty, costs some money. And if you ask for a jury trial on these things, the expense becomes horrendous. They're going to get $250 out of you, but it's going to cost them. It could easily cost them $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, maybe more, to conduct that jury trial. And they can't run a business on the basis of spending $3,000 to collect $250 and expect to stay in business. Now, the point is that as the number of dissidents grow, we have more and more people going to court and challenging. And they say, no, I don't think that cop has the right to give me that traffic ticket. I don't think this is right. I think I should have the right to travel without being impeded by the police. I don't think it's that big an issue for me not to have my seatbelt fastened. I don't care if I crossed a white line for a moment. Nobody was hurt. There's no common law damage. I didn't do any damage to anyone. I don't think I deserve a traffic ticket, certainly not to this extent. And there are a number of arguments that can be advanced, but when you make those arguments, and more people make those arguments, and more people make those arguments, the whole traffic ticket scheme begins to fold up. It becomes unprofitable. It's not a question of right and wrong. It's a question of profit and loss. Where does government make the most money? And it makes the most money off compliant people who are too timid or ignorant to resist government authority. They rely and depend on your consent. The police state needs your consent. Now, as soon as you start standing out and say, no, I think I'll go to court, I may even counterclaim. I may even countersue these guys. I may figure out a way where maybe I can make some money off them instead of them making money off me. Then you are the kind of person that government does not want. You're like one of these guys who goes to an all-meat or all-you-can-eat restaurant and eats 10 plates. You understand? The restaurant's losing money. They don't want your business. All right, they've calculated what the average person eats in a restaurant. When you come in and you exceed that average by a significant amount, you're wiping out their profits. It's the same thing when you don't cooperate with the government. We talk about traffic tickets. We could use the same example. I could be using the same example talking about the Internal Revenue Service and income taxes. There are an estimated, I mean, I've seen estimates as high as a third of the people who are, in theory, obligated to pay income taxes who don't file. These are 60, 70, 80 million people aren't filing. What's the government going to do about it? They can't afford to try all those people. They can't afford to catch those people. They can barely afford to write letters to all those people. You know what the postage is and the real cost of sending a letter to 80 million people is? It's a bunch. It's big. It's something like $5, $6 a document. then by the time you get done, it's an enormous, and they have to send a series of these letters. They can't afford to run the system without your consent, and it's part of the reason they want to survey you and me and everyone else so they can identify the dissidents, identify the sand and the gears of the police state. They want to know who you are, where you are, just in case they may need to remove you and me from the political arena. I'm Alfred Addis here at Financial Survival. Take a break for a couple more commercial announcements. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here at Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. I want to remind you our special for yesterday and today are $4 $5 Liberties. Those are 4 quarter-ounce gold coins, almost uncirculated in quality, and a subscription, the annual subscription to the International Forecast, or you can either renew an existing subscription or get a new one. And the total price for four of these $5 Liberties, plus one subscription, 1 year subscription to the International Forecast, $2,000. You're saving $150. Give Carl a call at 1-800-375-4188. Now, what else do we have? We're talking about privacy. And let me see where we are. Did I lose that? No, here's, I'm talking about privacy. They are listening to phone calls, or maybe not listening to phone calls. They're recording phone calls, who you talk to and how long you talk to them, all right, to try to paint a picture. And I guarantee they can. They don't need to hear what you're saying if they know who you're talking to. It's like finding out that you're calling a phone sex hotline on a regular basis. They can pretty much figure out what you're talking about. You understand? They can paint a very accurate picture of you and me and anyone you know simply by following our phone calls. Who are we talking to? That's all. Who do we talk to and how long do we talk to them? And if you can identify that information, you can pretty much figure out who's who. Well, here's another proposal, and this is from themarketticker.org, which is a good website that deals with, it's professional, it's mainstream, it deals with the, it's the Market Ticker, commentary on capital markets, and yet it has an article here, a South Carolina company is proposing that the state abandon regular license plates and switch to electronic plates controlled by the Department of Motor Vehicles. You get that? You have a license plate on the back of your vehicle that would be, it would be like a video screen. LED, LCD, whatever. And it would be hooked up to operate wirelessly where it would communicate with the Department of Motor Vehicles. And the Department of Motor Vehicles... They could change your number on your plate. They could change the words on your plate at any time. For example, if the Department of Motor Vehicles understood that your insurance expired yesterday, they can change your plate today to highlight the fact that the vehicle is no longer insured. We might have flashing lights, uninsured motorist, uninsured motorist, uninsured motorist. We could have notices on those license plates that you were a... There was a warrant out for your arrest. And any police officer driving by sees that light flashing on your own car. He says, oh, I got a live one here. Let's pull him in. Well, it's a proposal. It hasn't happened, and it's only in one state so far as we know. But it's one of those things where it makes you wonder what's going on. And in fact, this article continues. And it says, of course, even though the license plates might be instantly changed to declare various messages concerning SATA, this doesn't mean that the person who owns the car is driving it. But this comes back to the fundamental question. What happened to the fundamental liberty interest in being able to travel from one place to another? Right? How are we getting caught and ensnared in circumstances where our rights just get less and less, and we know that once upon a time we had a right to travel, and yet you can't travel now unless, one, you have a driver's license, and two, you have insurance, and three, your vehicle is registered, and four, none of your taillights have any problems, your license plates are visible, and God knows how many. It used to be you could travel. Right now, that's not the case. And I understand that there are reasons, and they're not just irrational and tyrannical, for government to want, and the public, to want to have some control over these motor vehicles. You get a vehicle out there on the road that weighs a ton or more, and it's traveling at 60, 70 miles an hour, it's not unreasonable to impose some regulations on that vehicle, because if it's out of control, or it's improperly maintained, or whatever, it can go out of control, and you get that much metal and plastic and whatever moving down the road in an uncontrolled fashion. People get killed. So the government's regulations are not completely irrational, but there is a point that seems to have been exceeded, in my opinion, where we sit back and we're not getting the liberty that we expected. We're not getting the liberty we were promised. It's being excused. The loss of liberty is being excused for public safety reasons, for any number of reasons. But somehow it's going too far. Where is our freedom? You know, we have kids right now in schools that are being arrested for just playing guns. I'm playing the game of guns, and they're going bang, bang. They hold out one finger, and they hold out their thumb like a hammer, and they're going bang, bang, and they get thrown out of the school for a day, for a week, whatever, for playing guns. We've seen reports where one kid was hauled off because he'd taken a piece of paper and cut it into the form of a gun. If you follow this at all, you know what I'm talking about. And these stories are increasingly frequent. They're not, we're not talking about millions of stories like this, but they're there, and they could be anywhere. And we're only talking about kids. And the government has decided, or some school has, the government has encouraged, and some school districts have decided to go along with government attitudes, government policy, and they are essentially saying we're not going to have any zero tolerance. Anybody has a gun or any kind of a weapon in the school, we throw them out instantly. There have been instances of kids that came to school and they accidentally had a fork in their pack or a knife in their pack, a butter knife from their breakfast. Not get thrown out of school. What we are doing is terrorizing these children. We are traumatizing the children in order to try to scare them away as adults, keep them too scared to pick up a gun. That's what we're trying to do. And I compare it back to when I was a kid, and we were running around playing guns all the time. And you know what? Nobody ever got hurt. A couple of guys behind me, Mac and Jeff Waspy. Huh? Kids, we go out and we all had our little six guns. We had, you know, our cowboy pistols and the rest of that. And bang, bang, gotcha. Bang, bang, you're dead. And the rest. Guess what? No one ever got hurt. And so far as I know I haven't shot anybody. And Mac and Jeff, so far as I know, they haven't shot anybody. And even though we were playing gun, and it was no harm. And there was a kind of freedom and a kind of liberty and a kind of innocence. And now we are teaching children to be afraid while government is trying to exert more and more control on the American people. And, of course, it's gone too far. And a significant number of people agree that it's gone too far. I don't know that we're a majority yet, but we are headed to the point where we may be a majority in the very near future. We are certainly no longer just a fringe group. The people that are concerned about growing government power, growing government surveillance, they are at least 30% of the population, and that's, you know, those figures come from sources that might be influenced by the government, and if they are, those figures are less than what is the fact, but it's admitted, accepted right now. 30% of the country, they absolutely think government's gone too far. And I guarantee those are the people government wants to surveil. What are you people up to? How dare you think that government has grown too large, gone too far? How dare you challenge their authority? Here's an illustration of some of that challenge, or here's an illustration of the attitude. Here's a report that in the last 24 hours, sales of the Big Brother book, 1984, on Amazon.com, this was actually published yesterday, but in the previous 24 hours, the sale of Big Brother book 1984 on Amazon.com have soared by almost 7,000% as the reality of the surveillance state comes to the public's attention. As Liberty Blitzkrieg's Mike Krieger notes, we suppose it makes sense that people would want to get up to speed on the dystopian world being constructed rapidly and secretly around them. 1984 is now the fourth fastest rising sales book and the 184th most popular book on Amazon. What's that tell us? It's another one of the leaves in the breeze that says, look, the American people are sitting back and saying, we've had enough. All right? It's not even clear that the Muslims are the ones responsible for 9/11, but whatever happened on 9/11/2000, when the Twin Towers dropped in Washington D.C. at the World, or excuse me, at New York at the World Trade Center, and something else hit the and the Building 7 fell for no discernible reason, and something hit the Pentagon. Maybe it's time we get over it. Maybe it's time we stop using that as an excuse to justify every damn fool program that some fascist psychopath in Washington thinks would be cool. It is not clear that this government is protecting us. It is not clear that the government is providing for our public safety. It is instead apparent that the government uses public safety as an excuse to only to increase its own power. Not to help us, not to make us more safe, not to make our lives better, not to increase our chances of finding a job or becoming more prosperous or perhaps escaping an economic depression. No. They're working to build a bigger and better police state. In 1984, his sales are up 7,000% in 24 hours. That's amazing. And it's evidence that something's going on in this country. Something's going on in the world. Something is even going on in government. You know, I talk about this story here. Sales of George Orwell's book, 1984, have surged in the last 24 hours. I talk about it. You hear it. Do you think that message has not reached President Obama? Do you think it hasn't reached the CSA and the National Security Agency? Do you think it hasn't reached your congressmen and your senators who are beginning to think right now that if they want to get elected in 2014, they'd better come out against government surveillance? It's just astonishing there's no way government could have anticipated this kind of report. Sales for the book 1984 are up 7,000% in a 24-hour period. They could not have anticipated. They couldn't be prepared to stop it. That's got to be a surprise to them, just as it is to you and me. And yet it's a surprise with great implications. And it does not bode well for government surveillance. It does not bode well for big government. It is cause for celebration among people like myself and people like you who are concerned about big government, who want this country to move back toward liberty and away from the police state. So, what can we say? You know, the world has not come to an end. We have our dark periods and we have our ups and our downs, but, there is hope. There is room for encouragement. Here's another one here just in the last minute or so before the program comes out. Here's another. Germany demands Obama explain American-style Stasi methods. Stasi were the secret police in East Germany, not communist secret police, Stasi. And they are complaining that America has adopted Stasi-like methods. And the little article, just comment, even when Germans are staring open-mouthed at what they call American-style Stasi methods, you know that things have gotten a little out of hand, as Reuters reports. German outrage over the U.S. internet spying program has broken out ahead of a visit by Barack Obama, with ministers demanding the president provide full explanation when he lands in Berlin next week, and one official likening the tactics of those of the East German Stasi. The more a society monitors, controls, and observes its citizen, the less free it is. And this is from the German Minister of Justice, and he added, the suspicion of excessive surveillance of communication is so alarming that it cannot be ignored. This is coming out from the outside of this country, right? People around the world are concerned about it, and the government says, oh, it's just a modest intrusion into your privacy. Bunk! It needs to be stopped. It needs to be rejected. There is no justification for people following. I don't mind. I don't even mind if they listen to my phone calls on one level. I don't have anything to say that's all that important over my telephone to begin with. But it's got to be stopped if we want to maintain at least the facade of liberty and freedom in this country. We've got to push this government back. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. I want to thank all of you for listening. I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.